702.
Refill is on Twitter
at
Mbakanyane.
Absolutely. That hashtag is at Mbakanyane. Make that, rather, the handle is at Mbakanyane. Make that hashtag weekend breakfast. We definitely want to hear from you. And of course, we're dipping into the Nature Diary now, talking to Tim Neary. And very shortly, we'll be joined by a guest on the line as well. So if you have any questions or comments, send them on over to 31702 or send those WhatsApps and those voice notes to 072-702-1702. And we'll gladly read them out and play them as well. Alternatively, you can just give us a call on 011-883-0702. Good morning, Tim Neary.
Good morning. And are you bright-eyed and bushy-tailed this morning?
I'm something, all right. I'm waiting on that second cup of coffee. Then we might see some magic happening.
Oh, well, there we go. You know, I've got my cup of, I don't know what you would call it, but anyway, I've got my brew sitting here quietly. I'm watching the Mossy who's busy stealing the show, that's busy in the bird feeder.
Mm-hmm,
By the way, that milk bottle bird feeder, it took them about 3 days to get used to the white bottle.
Yes.
And they are loving it. They're in that every day. There's not an issue.
Well, that's good to hear. And maybe for our listeners out there who went ahead and used your followed your instructions on making a milk bottle feeder, they can also just send an SMS on 31702 and let us know how that's going in the garden scheme of things. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's we've got that sort of spring smell now, which is. Yeah, obviously, don't get too excited, because I'm sure Simon is the right person to tell us. But don't get too excited. The weather is going to possibly have that one or two cold dips, but oh, what beautiful days. And we're starting to see a couple of buds appearing here, there, and everywhere. So, it's lovely.
Well, you know what? As I said at the top of the show, I'm taking this warmer weather and running with it. I am incredibly excited. My house is, of course, an icebox, so I'm very, very happy. So, Tim, today we're talking about the importance of ranger training. And I guess you'll tell us why you picked up on this topic. And when you're done, what I'll do is we'll say hello to Craig Hay from the Southern African Wildlife Trafficking Hub lead. But talk to me about why you picked up on this topic, the importance of ranger training.
Well, you know, I think we've got a bit of a misunderstanding about what rangers are. So we always, when we go off and we stay at a reserve or stay at a resort, you get the fellow that's driving the Land Rover or the Land Cruiser with the chap on the front who's the tracker, and that we think is the ranger. And of course, the 31st of July every year is World Ranger Day, which is celebrating not only rangers who've lost their life in the line of duty, and we see a lot of that in Africa particularly, but of course it's celebrating rangers across the world. And to understand that the ranger is a warden of the wilderness, that is the person who wakes up one day as a child usually and thinks, I want to work with wildlife, I want to work with nature, and I want to work on the land. And they're the folk that are out on patrols, they're removing the snares, they're making sure that the water holes are right, that the fences are working, that there's no poaching. They're the people that actually look after, they're the people behind the scenes, and not the guy at the front that you will see telling you all about the local mossy as you drive across the bush or stop and leap out and show you some plant. That is not the ranger. That's a guide.
Uh-huh.
The ranger is the person who's really got his hands in there, and he's passionate about it. And in some places, you know, like Zimbabwe, where rangers have worked for 18 months without pay, that's dedication. That's serious dedication.
Well, on that note, then, let's. You've invited Craig Hay, who's the Southern African Wildlife Trafficking Hub lead, on the work done at the Braveheart or Resilient Ranger at the Braveheart. And let's say good morning to Craig. Craig, welcome to Weekend Breakfast. Thank you so much for your time.
Good morning, Rafila. Thanks for having me on the show. Lovely to be able to chat early on a Sunday morning.
An absolute pleasure. Usually I apologize to my guests for getting them up so early in the morning, but you're in your element, I'm guessing, right, Craig?
Absolutely. That's the best time of the day.
100%. And of course, Tim is on the line as well. And I'm going to just kick off our chat by asking you to tell us about the work that you do, Craig.
Thanks, Rafila. So I'm with WWF South Africa. My broader role is supporting work on illegal wildlife trafficking in Southern Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have a project based in the Greater Limpopo TFCA working on illegal wildlife trafficking, particularly with a focus on rhino and elephants in the TFCA.
Mm-hmm.
It's supported by USAID. But, one of the key aspects is how we can support rangers. They have such a critical role being boots on the ground in protecting these areas. So, this training curriculum is really around how we can support rangers in the really essential work that they do.
Sure. Before I hand you over to Tim, I guess I'm going to ask you then to delve into what the curriculum, that ranger training curriculum, looks like. How long is it? Where does it take place? And I imagine it's pretty grueling, no?
Yes, Rafila. So the ranger curriculum that we are developing now is something different to the typical standard ranger training that usually deals with environmental conservation or law enforcement aspects. You know, these are the more technical skills that rangers need.
Mm-hmm.
But what we recognize is that rangers are facing significant challenges in the work that they do that needs a set of skills and knowledge above those normal technical skills. Rangers have to deal with really complex social and ecological problems. They face significant challenges on a daily basis, to their personal safety. It may be due to wild animals or poachers.
Sure.
They often spend extended times away from their family. Often, conservation is not always well funded, so there's often financial pressure for the organization for which they work. And they often supporting extended family members. A ranger has many, many demanding roles and works in a really complex environment. So this training is not the usual type of ranger training which all rangers do go through. This one looks at, a more holistic approach and how can we support rangers in, support of these complex social needs and the complexity that they need to deal with.
All right. Tim, go ahead.
Craig, rangers themselves across the world, though, is it something that we face, that other places face with the same challenges when I'm talking about anti-poaching, etc.?
The rangers do face similar challenges across the world, Tim. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously different from place to place. In Africa in particular, though, we have high value species and rangers may find themselves often under, more physical threats. In Africa, the International Rangers Foundation just released a Roll of Honor for the last 12 months. And, globally, 139 rangers have lost their lives in the last 12 months. 59 of those were African rangers. Mm-hmm. And about 30% of those deaths were often due to homicide. So rangers do face significant challenges. There are many similarities across the world, certainly they sometimes are an under-recognized sector and really need to be supported in the really difficult work that they do.
I made a comment earlier as well about the fact that somebody wakes up and they decide they want to work with the land. They've got a love for the bush, a love for the animals, a love for the environment, nature, etc. It's around them. What has been the effect, though, the change with, as you said, we have the high-value species. What is the effect on the rangers who really want to go out there and inspect fences, remove the odd snare, and have a life in the bush, and suddenly they're confronted by a military-styled life, which is not what they really signed up for? Because surely, if one wants to do that, you go along and join the army or the police force, to go and be shot at, etc. And as you say, it's a rough life. What has been the effect over time on the rangers?
That's true, Tim. Many, many people get into it for exactly those reasons. And, with the escalating poaching crisis, suddenly find themselves in a much more law enforcement type of role. Which does place significant pressure on rangers, and this is one of the reasons why we identified the need for this Braveheart training, which can help rangers with those skills for developing that type of resilience, both professionally, so giving them new skills, you know, able to deal with these stresses, but also personally. You know, there's certainly a lot of emotional pressures on rangers, you know, dealing with these threats, the worrying about their families when they're away from home for, you know, often 3 weeks a month. And things like COVID-19 have just escalated that and, you know, added to those concerns. So it's it is a challenge. But I think we really need to work to addressing illegal wildlife trafficking. And, you know, often it's syndicates that prey on vulnerable communities that, you know, surround these protected areas and really depend on these areas for earning a living, you know, often through tourism or other means, you know. So, you know, what one can try and address the drivers and really make sure that communities are, you know, really having a stake and a benefit and you know, directly involved with these protected areas, I think that will go a long way to de-escalating the problem. And at least, you know, rangers can, you know, not have to play such a strong security role in future if you're able to do that.
Craig, I'm curious about then compensation, whether or not, you know, if you're talking about these strong security roles that rangers have had to suddenly play or recently play, is compensation adequate or comparable to other sectors in which the same things are expected of people or employees?
No, you know, that can be a significant problem as well. You know, the conservation agencies that are mandated for protecting these areas often have very small budgets, and, you know, that obviously impacts on what compensation they're able to pay rangers, which is a challenge. So certainly, you know, and rangers are often supporting extended families, which adds to the pressure on having just one salary. So it is a significant issue and something that needs to be looked at. You know, how can we compensate rangers in line with other similar sectors?
I think it's quite a concern, really, that if we look at any form of passion, or anything that is possibly passion-driven, you've always got organizations that are shouting on the one side about how important it is for us to protect our nature and to protect the areas and what have you. But the reality is that the encouragement for somebody to go into that profession and actually be able to live, bring up a family, educate your kids, is very, very limited. And it doesn't really matter whether you're an artisan or you're something like a ranger. I think it's the disparity in that is actually quite concerning. And particularly when you look at the folk that go along, you know, and they want to go out with a ranger and they're possibly somebody earning mega money and the poor old ranger who's keeping them safe and protected is earning minimalistic stuff.
Yeah.
How do you, in fact, Craig, encourage people, though, given those circumstances, to become rangers? Because surely it's something that we're actually going to need more and more of into the future.
Absolutely, Tim. And you know, I think with you know, ongoing global environmental crisis is only getting worse, and we need skilled and committed people in the sector that are ready to, you know, be there on the ground and making a difference. I think that's really important, and we need to look at ways to encourage that, and because we really need to support these remaining natural areas that are so critical to our human well-being.
Sure. And Craig, to Tim's point, we often hear about and have supported or been involved in, as you know, as individuals or as society, been involved in campaigns to raise money for the conservation of certain animals, right? How often is the plight of rangers, as well as the remuneration and compensation thereof, highlighted in the same manner and as loudly and wildly, as widely as the plight of the animals themselves is? Because if this is the case, if we're going to need, as you said, if we're going to need more rangers and to focus on the work that rangers do with climate change happening and the various international and global pressures, this is something that definitely needs to change, not so?
Absolutely, that's true. Very often the focus is on animals. That's why this International Ranger Foundation has the World Ranger Day, which highlights these issues around rangers. It's important that we look at ways to support organizations that are working on these environmental issues and having an impact in terms of protecting our natural resources. So rangers is certainly a component of that, and they're the people that do work on the ground and are really important to support and acknowledge.
How is COVID-19, this pandemic, affecting the efforts, the working conditions, and the general employment conditions that rangers have to contend with, and the industry, I guess, at large?
Yeah, it would have an impact. It varies from place to place. There may have been circumstances, especially during the stages when there was hard lockdowns, where rangers would have been unable to, take their time off or travel back to their families. That certainly would have been an impact. And rangers as an essential service obviously keep working throughout this whole pandemic, which adds pressure to them. Many protected areas are dependent strongly on tourism revenue to support their operational costs. There is immense pressure on these areas to fund their operations, and that can absolutely have an impact on rangers themselves. Mm.
Is there any sense then within that that sector that new ways or new models of operating need to be explored and need to be found?
It's critical.
Is it possible?
Most definitely. I think this is something that has to be a high level conversation. We've seen now how dependent conservation is on tourism revenue, but we really need to put heads together and look at new and innovative ways to have a diverse funding base for protected areas. I think that's a really critical conversation.
I think one of the things to also understand, Rafiro, is that, it's how we keep on talking about conservation is not only about bugs and bunnies. It's about mankind. Or it's about the planet. It's about biodiversity.
Sure.
And I think it's also the understanding what the ranger does in the land of biodiversity and in that central node, so to speak, and then allowing it to fill over into the farmlands, into the cities, etc. And once you view that as a holistic landscape, then I think you can possibly understand a lot more about them. And, of course, the other thing with the pandemic that's happened is that the funding from corporates, the funding from benefit style people around the world, philanthropists,
sure,
is kind of drying up, and it's drying up at an incredibly fast rate. So, that's also had a huge effect. It's those unknown people that have always funded that I think are also running into a little bit of a glitch when it comes to this.
Sure. Yeah, so much to think about. And I guess in many ways, our conversation is heading down a rather sort of more, not more, but dark path. But, I guess what I want to find out then from Craig is, Any bright points or things that we can hold on to and say in terms of conservation at large, but the work and the importance of the work of rangers? What can we hold on to? What can we support? And if we're having this public conversation, what should we be looking to making sure it does happen going forward?
Yes, Rafila, I think, we've made such significant gains over the last, many decades in terms of protecting our resources. And, I think this is a time to really reflect and, it shows the vulnerability that we have to these sort of global shocks.
Mm.
But I think we can also reflect on the successes that we've had so far and, the excellent work that has been done out there. And it's just a time to really redouble our efforts and focus our thinking as to how we can, make sure we all live in a sustainable manner. And, I think, as Tim rightly said, it's ultimately about human well-being. And, each of us can play that part. And there's no time like now to do that.
Mm. Tim, I'm going to give the final word to you.
Yeah, I think that, when you say the positive side, we can look at all the negatives quite easily. But we can also go across the world, India, America, parts of Europe, South Africa, various other parts of Africa, where there have been successes, where national parks have been revitalized, where the coastlines and the understanding of the marine protected areas and folk that are protecting those beach lines, talking to people as well, the fact that the rangers have come out and they talk to folk on the beach lines and explain to them why they're asking them to do X, Y, and Z. There are an awful lot of positives. And it's just too easy to find the negatives rather than celebrate those positives that the rangers do.
Absolutely. So, Craig, not only are you doing important work, which is supporting rangers and giving them resources, but now Tim has added an extra role to your job, which is talking to being public-facing as well and doing more of what you're doing this morning. How do you feel about that?
Absolutely. That's important. And, the more we can have these conversations, the better. So, that's certainly a critical role of everyone working in this space.
All right, fantastic stuff. Thank you so much for your time this morning, Craig. It's been really, really interesting having this conversation with you. And good luck and all the best with your endeavor.
Thanks, Rafulu. Thank you, Tim.
Pleasure, guys. Pleasure. Have a good one.
All right, that's Craig Hay, the Southern African Wildlife Trafficking Hub lead. And, of course, he's with the Worldwide Fund for Nature in Southern Africa. Tim, any idea what we'll be chatting about next week? This was thoroughly enjoyable.
Well, I think next week the one thing we might just touch on is what's sitting on my lap at the moment is my four-legged killing machine, according to a report showing how many animals cats kill. So I think we'll touch on your Moggy, what it could be doing, getting up to, and are these reports really 100% gospel? So let's go into that next week. And then, I think we're going to also look at a new book, or the new Sassel book that's come out, the Sassel Bird Book. And it's kind of interesting because you can use your cell phone and your bird book together.
All right.
We'll explain that next week.
Fantastic. Tim Neary, always a pleasure. You and I will touch base next week, Sunday,
at 6:30.
Catch you then. All right.
Bye-bye now.
Hope you enjoyed that one. And,